The Shark Tank. No Jumper. Sharpest, coolest podcast in the world.
Church.
And today, I got my co-host, Blazzy. Y'all know, he got the, who is that right there, Church?
Chapo Mi Narco.
You did.
Yeah.
We got Blazzy in the building.
Yes, we do.
And we got the infamous, the classic, the in it for a culture, and he ain't no vulture. Mm. We got Caskey in the building today, man.
Let's go, man. Thank you for the intro, man.
This one right here, hey, man, this one right here is major, man, because, you know, I really respect where you come from, you know, and you had said something about, you know, you want to keep, you know, yourself at a low level to keep your integrity high.
I didn't say I want to keep myself, but I said that I prefer being at the level I'm at or a lower level if it meant that my integrity was high, because I've seen a lot of artists in the game and get success off of things that don't resonate with me and my values and who I would be. And I'm not like in this to reach any of those outward accolades. You know, my whole journey through music is about my internal process, what I can provide to people of value, who I can become through this process.
Yeah.
None of that really matters. Like, outward success is always something we're chasing to take care of our people, put on, you know, all that. But
right.
Integrity more important, for sure.
Right. How did you even, you know, tat it the fuck up?
Yeah.
Tat it down, Church. Your face, your forehead, all this, man.
The ear.
What, when did you feel like, man, fuck it, I'm about to just start tatting all this shit up, man? Because obviously, when we start doing things like that to our body, man, the chances of landing a cool, proper job is slim to none.
Yeah, like, I knew when I was young, like in middle school, that I wanted to look like this. I was into like metal bands and shit like that. So I always just, this was who I wanted to turn into. And so like I had a half sleeve in high school. You know, I was like one of the only kids in my school with tattoos.
You were already half sleeving by then?
Yeah, I had this half sleeve. It looked like shit, but half sleeve and some stomach tat. I had like shitty tats, but.
What'd your mom say when she saw the first one?
She cried. She's cried every step of the
way. Oh, man. So it's escalated down to the teeth.
She cries the first day, and then, you know, after that, it's okay. This is who I am. She knows I'm a good person. But, you know, since I was young, I wanted to look like this. And then I never wanted to work a job or care about that shit anyway. So, like, I knew I was going to look like this no matter what. Second I got a record deal, I was like, boom, both my hands. And then I've been wanting to do the teeth for, like, 6 years. Like, I have so many fans that remember me on tour telling them about this idea.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody around me for a long time was just like, don't do it. You're going to ruin your career. You can't, you know? So I waited a little while. And then finally, like, last year, I was like, man, I'm done waiting. This is exactly who I want to be. I know it. I love it. I wake up every day like, motherfucker, I'm that dude.
Well, that shit is hard, bro. I don't think I ever see someone with a tattoo like that.
Yeah, dang, it don't exist, bro.
You don't really.
I mean, it's starting to pop up now, but, you know.
Yeah, you don't really see that like that, man.
I love it.
What I gotta ask you, man, like, you're obviously unique. You know, I like your music, man. I ain't gonna lie to you. I was listening to your joints, man, on the way up this morning on the plane. I played them back, man, a few times. And the new shit that you got coming is.
Are you listening to one?
Yeah, man, is excellent, man. The first one and the third one, man, the motherfuckers smack. And I'd rather you talk about them later on throughout this conversation. Yeah. But I gotta ask you, man, what's it like being a rapper in a obvious flooded industry?
Right.
You know,
annoying as fuck. Honestly, annoying.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's mad annoying when people are like, "Are you a rapper?" Like, they just assume it. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm a fuck. Goddamn it, I am a rapper." And like, it's kind of annoying just because the culture of, like, you know, what rappers are. And I get it. I look like this, so I'm not exactly the best poster child to be like, everybody has stupid face tats and fucking doesn't. You know, I get it. Sounds like hypocritical, but. Like I did this for me, you know, like this is like real genuine to me. And so I don't know, sometimes it's mad annoying because I don't really resonate with a lot of things in rap culture, but I love being an artist and I love the opportunity that I got to make music. Like, music's the most important thing to me. It changed my life. It saved my life in my darkest times. It's always been a part of my life. So there wasn't really like another option for me. I had to do this. So I take the good with the bad. It's definitely more good than bad.
At what age did you decide to do music though? Like, were you already kind of going through some shit and you just found it as an outlet?
Yeah, like I started, like I always wanted to be in like bands and like be a singer or a screamer.
What kind of bands?
Like metal music.
Which
like
bands?
Screamo, Under Oath, Norma Jean, Every Time I Die.
So I was fucking with like Chelsea Grin.
I don't even know that band.
Man. I was fucking with some metalcore shit.
Yeah, Job for a Cowboy. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I like shit like that. So that was like kind of my vibe for a while. Then when I was like around 15, I found Nas. Nas changed my life. Like my sister had always been putting me on good rap music. So I knew of good rap, but it didn't connect to me that I could do that or that would be something I would be passionate about till I heard Nas. And I was just like, he said, I live amongst no roses, only the drama. For real, a nickel plate is my fate. My medicine is the ganja. And I was like, this is poetry, bro. And it changed my life. And then I started rapping like in high school, like 15. And then I had like, you know, I lost my dad at 16. And then that's really where it was like, this is the only thing I can do because it's the only thing that make me feel okay.
So, were you close with Pops?
Yeah. Yeah, man. He's my hero. Yeah, he's my hero.
If I'm not mistaken, you got the tattoo kind of dedicated to kind of like what he was about, right?
Yeah, like I know some people are like he has a fucking Harley tat on his face, but yeah, it's from my pops. Like we used to ride and shit, and so when he passed away, I just put it on my face.
And you just decided just to like channel music right there and then, kind
of. Honestly, I didn't even decide it. Like I was sitting at the tip of my driveway. My dad committed suicide at my house, so he was, I got brought home from school by the police, and I was at the tip of my driveway, and police, I wasn't allowed to go inside the house. They're like getting his body, and I'm like, you know, bawling in the driveway, and then this song. I was 16, and then this song idea comes into my head, and it was weird at the time because I felt kind of guilty for being inspired at that time.
You get a rush of emotion. Sometimes it might not even hit you.
I'm feeling this shit right now. Judge him even telling the story.
If Father's Day is on Sunday, I'm feeling like, you know, heavy about this
stuff. Man, let it out. You gotta let it out, bro.
So like, you know, that day at the house, this song idea comes into my head like while I'm in the driveway. And that was when it just was different for me. Like the music that I was making when I first started rapping for that first year was just real surface layer, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was like when I lost my dad, I just changed as a person. It had a whole different layer of depth to me that was, I didn't know that before, you know? Like my life wasn't that super extra hard prior to that. It was, you know, it was comfortable. I had issues in my family and all that shit, but it wasn't like that drove me. And then like after he passed and that day when that song came in my head, it was like everything just made sense to me of like I'm meant to be an artist. I'm meant to like tell my story through this, and like I've never looked back, bro. And I honestly, I've loved the journey the whole way. Like I just always channel my pain into music, you know.
That's beautiful. I love hearing stories of just people taking like this pain and kind of expressing themselves to an outlet where it gets to the point where people could relate to it.
Yeah.
And now you're not only servicing yourself, but you're also servicing people who are going through something similar.
That's like my whole mission right now is I just realized that like who I am as an artist is different. That's why I don't like care as much about the outward success. Like I just realized who I am as an artist is like I'm meant to help people heal, you know, because I've been through some shit and music always helped me do that.
What do you feel about the N word?
White people shouldn't say it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when I was like coming up, like full transparency, when I was like rapping and shit around my homies, nobody cared. So it was like, it was kind of normal. Like white people also said it and shit when rap. But just as I get older and I grow up, I'm like, it's not my place at all. It's not my discussion to have. White people should practice not being able to do everything anyways, because we live in a culture where everybody else can't do everything. Right. And white people tend to be kind of entitled and be like, well, I could blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. It's not worth the energy. And it to me, it's like, there's no positive to it. So just don't say it. Keep it moving. I could still rap without that. So.
Right. I listen to your music, man. And you got a certain style to yourself, man. Like you seem like you seasoned in it. Like you done been through a lot of pain. I always say some of the greatest artists, they'll tell you, you know, and I'll be honest with you, man, because I feel like I'm into an art, you know. You'll never experience greatness until you experience pain.
I just wrote it on the wall. Our pain is our gift. I've been saying that, and I heard that somewhere, and it just resonates with me deeply. I was talking to Yellow Wolf about this too, of like, sometimes like the most special artists in the world are meant to be like martyrs in ways, like we go through things, and artists are naturally kind of more sensitive. They're more, you feel things deeper, you think of them deeper. So, you know, our pain is our gift, bro. That's what we
100%
turns us into. All the most painful shit we went in our life turned us into someone else.
Yeah. Literally.
For the better. Sometimes for the worse.
Made it stronger.
But it could turn you for the better, you know?
You know, even with you mentioning that, like, myself, you know, I'm a designer. I make clothes full time. I don't necessarily do music, but, you know, through the shit that I've been through, I've been able to express myself.
Channel it.
You know what I mean? And almost, like, share better art just because of the pain. It could be indirectly. It doesn't have to be something that coincides with what you went through.
I wrote something in this book I wrote that says, in order for anything to live, so many things must die. And it's just,
you dropping bars today.
Yeah, like it's the truth, you know? Bro. Like anything, bro, you want to make something beautiful, even a flower, bro. So many things have to decay and die just for that flower to come about. And that's like essentially all creativity. You know, we're made in the image of God. God's a creator, you know? That's, you know.
You speak of words. You speak of these words like words have a meaning to you, right?
Yeah.
You had sent me a song, man. Like, I think it's coming off of some of your new joints. Mm-hmm. You had sent me a song that you had labeled. I listened to it on the plane this morning, man, coming into Burbank. And I listened to it, and it was a song called Murder for Hire.
Yeah.
What's that mean to you? Like, since we talk about words, you know what I'm saying? And
they resonate.
Yeah, what is it, man? Like, why did you make this song called Murder for Hire?
I just, that energy of that record is like real talk that shit. Like I do this, but I just, that approach was like, that's how I approach music. I'm finna fucking tear the fucking roof off. Like I just go in, I'm ready to die for the record. Like, I don't know, that was my approach to it. When I come on a beat, it's Murder for Hire. I took my old self, let that boy burn in the fire. Truth.
I liked it, bro, because it really wasn't even no hook to it. It was just kind of like
talking that shit.
Just kind of, it was like some Drake 7 a.m. on Bridal Path shit off his new album. It was kind of like, it wasn't no hook. It's just kind of like, see me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You had did another joint I listened to called Rock Bottom.
Yeah.
So I like what you name your joints, because it seems like these are painful moments that you feel like you can release.
Yeah, like especially this album, you know, every album kind of got different energy. It's like about where I'm at, but this tape that I'm about to drop is called This Isn't Even My Final Form. And I'm going through heavy shit in my life right now, just, you know, family, personal shit, interrelational shit. And also I could feel the energy of the world right now. Feels like a lot of people are kind of going through stuff. Like me and my friend were talking about that in the scene of music. Like there's not a lot of hits and bangers coming out right now. And it's, I told him I just feel like it's because that don't really stick right now, because people are kind of need more from music. So this album, like I was just really intentional. We made the whole album in 1 week. And I just like,
damn.
Yeah, I was intentional about every song we made. We built from scratch. We spent hours before making them talking and just seeing where everybody's head's at. And it was like, I'm in a kind of painful spot right now, so I don't care to mask that over and talk about other shit. Let me just fucking pour it all out into here, and that's what always helped me in my life.
That's the most progressive way of dealing with it, because you know you could be the toughest guy on earth, you know what I mean, you bottle those emotions, you don't express it, you feel me, they're just gonna kind of fester up and implode.
And I spend a lot of time like numbing myself to pain. So I'm at this place
with
in my life.
With what though, Caskey? What do you numb yourself with?
Drugs, sex, attention. Vices. Yeah, vices. That's what everybody numbs themselves with, essentially. Like all your vices are just you running from uncomfortable emotions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I'm like at this point for one of the first times in my life where I'm just facing my pain head on. Like people see I'm going through shit, they're sending me love and shit, and I'm like, I don't need it, I'm strong. I'm gonna face it. I'll be all right. I've been through the worst shit.
Do you feel like because, you know, being from a child, maybe not having the approval that you lack that thereof today, to where you don't really care about somebody's approval, you're gonna kind of do what you want to do?
Yeah, well, I had to find it myself, you know, like I didn't get that validation from my dad. Like my mom a saint, you know, I don't got nothing bad to say about that, but like I just had to find these answers, like kind of myself. And through the internet, lots of people drop gems and things that teach you, like, you know, I found my male role models through the internet. And so, but like, in a sense, I had to find that shit in myself. And that's how I feel now. It's like, I don't need nothing from nobody. You know, I just, I'm a giver.
That goes to my next question for you. Do you seek approval from other artists to continue to create and be an artist yourself into the future?
Nah,
being let's be honest, being white
in a
rap game been predominantly owned by black folks.
See, I say I used to, like, and I've had moments of validation from other artists. Like, I mean, I got signed to Birdman, so it's like, I think when I was younger, I cared about that and I wanted to be accepted in these things. And like, as I get older, it's like, what does that even mean?
You start realizing it's a big ass rat race.
What does that mean? Who's accepting me? Some other artist? I don't even know if I like that person's character. Yeah. I don't know. I met mad artists that I'm like, okay, I met you in real life. I don't fuck with you. Why would I care if you like my music? I've gone through so much rejection in my career that I'm so jaded. Like, I don't care no more.
What was the turning point in your career, though? Because, you know, like you said, you kind of did kind of get into the game where it's like, I mean, you're almost looking for that, you know, that kind of validation, but more into your career, you start realizing this is more for myself and for my core fan base. Like, what was that turning point like?
I think it was like a combination of like not getting it from other artists. And I don't think I got it for any other reason than like I wasn't really tapped into the level I was supposed to be. So naturally, I'm not, like, I'm getting way more validation now than I ever have. And it's because mentally I'm aligned with where I'm supposed to be. So, but at the time, I wasn't getting it and it felt like rejection, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no, in reality, we're not going to attract the wins that we need if we're not mentally ready for them. So I just, I think I just went through a lot of rejection through that thing. And then I just have had like a powerful connection with my fan base. You know, I make pain music, so people who connect with my shit, it's not surface layer, it's not like, no knock, but it's not like a little punk song and people return, you know, but it's like my shit is a little deeper. And so
it's,
I just
texture
found,
to it.
Yeah, I found a lot of value in that, and then that just over time just changed me, man. Like, I think I'll get all of that this year because I no longer seek it. You know, it's like the life always works like
that. Do you consider your music more melodic?
I'm getting more melodic. Yeah, I'm getting more melodic now, like, because I just am studying music. I enjoy it and shit. I used to be like real, real wordy and like focus on words, and now I try to say more with less, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I kind of want to go back and rewind a bit to when you were 16. So up until then, how long did it take you to finally find your voice and have eyes on you?
I didn't even find it then. I was trash for years. Like, 15 to 18, 19, I was terrible. Like, I was not naturally talented. Yeah, I'm going to be real. I was not gifted. I ain't come from a musical family.
Right.
My family didn't have good musical taste. My mom bumps REO Speedwagon. Like, I hope y'all know who that is. Exactly.
Yeah. It's
like,
I'll be honest, they
weren't playing Prince and Michael Jackson I wasn't naturally gifted in it, but I just was like interested and drawn to it. So it took me a long time, like a long, lots of awkward songs. And thank God for my friends that still encourage me through that.
Yeah, I mean, because when you're 16, you really go through a bottleneck. Because I mean, I don't know about you, but I thought I was gonna be a rapper at 16.
Everyone's a dork.
You thought we was gonna be everything. I'm gonna be honest with you. I thought I was gonna be in the game, and that's what I did.
Yeah,
man.
I'm gonna be honest with you, Church.
You had tunnel vision.
I thought I was gonna be in the game because that's where I saw it was at for me at that time, and that's what I did. You know, and I had hiccups along the way, but shit, who don't?
Yeah, like, I knew I was going to be a rapper, but I don't think anybody else was sure as I was.
It was kind of like a slow, steady incline from,
honestly,
like,
honestly, what it was like mad delusion since I started making music. Like, when I made my first song at 15, I thought I was going to be the next Eminem off of that song.
Do you have a bar for us off that song?
No, I don't even remember. It was the worst. It was over a Usher
good
beat.
Good question.
Like, bro, it was over a Usher. It was called D-Boy, and it was over a Usher beat. I hope no one ever hears
Usher
it.
Usher beat? What do you mean?
I need everybody to go on Caskey's MySpace right now.
No, you can't. This is years before I even have MySpace. This is years before I even have MySpace. By the time I got to MySpace, I was much more seasoned. But, like, you know, I was just delusional. Like, I just believed every year that it was gonna happen. And, like, you know, at this point, I've been rapping for like damn 10 years, and it's like, I still feel that way. I don't know. I don't get discouraged when it don't. I just am like, the world gonna figure it out. You know.
I know something about you.
Oh God, what you know?
I know that you like to print CDs and still sell them. Yep. What was that like?
I'm gonna ask you. I got 2,000 at the crib all right,
but
now.
Look, yeah, but 20 bucks a piece. The only reason I asked that because I want to ask you, what is that like? Like going and getting some CDs.
I love
it. In the digital world today,
I love
to where
it.
Everybody goes to iTunes, Spotify. I sold
1,000 mixtapes at $100 last year. Man. In the digital era that will never be online, and no fan who's bought it has uploaded it.
What inspired you to do that? Because I did hear that earlier.
That's like a fucking, that's like really being exclusive.
What inspired you to do that though?
I just like
in the middle of the streaming era.
I just it's like multiple things. Like I've always been into CDs because like when I was in high school, we literally burnt CDs, wrote my name on them, and passed them around high school.
True.
Did it. And then like when I was first coming up, it was pre-streaming era, so I would print I would sell weed so I could print 1,000 CDs in these little thin sleeves. And then I'd go to like a show of an artist or something, and then at the let out of their show, I'd give out all the CDs for free.
How long were you doing that for?
For like a year and a half.
Man, really hustling because
like the following shows and shit. Okay, so I did that for a long time. So I've always had that connection with physical CDs, and then like I got fans all over the country. Like the people in the Midwest and shit, they still rocking CDs in their cars. So I just, and it's just something dope about seeing it physically. Of like, fuck, I made this art.
True.
It's different than online.
True.
Holding the CDs.
How does that feel doing that in a digital world today? Because that's got to take some courage. Because you know nobody's doing that anymore. So you got to really consider yourself one off to say, I know these CDs are gonna sell, and I'm gonna sell them for a highest bid.
Yeah, and I like, you know, they're 20 bucks a pop. So yeah, I don't know. It just always has worked for me.
Bucks a pop is the highest bid at this point for a CD because nobody's buying it.
And honestly, I sell out of every tape that I press up a couple thousand and I sell them out. And I don't know. It just has always worked for me. And I think like when you just create that, like so I got a lot of fans that just want to buy the CD just to support me, bro. They know you're gonna pay me $20 for the CD. I'm going to make that whole 20. But if you go stream my album, I make less than a penny. Even if you bump it all day, every day.
Right.
You know, it's like, so it's just support. You know, I've given more value than I've taken.
Right.
So I give value, and then, you know, people come and support it. And then the $100 mixtape thing was more like I had so much music that I loved, but I didn't want to put it on these albums. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, the fans that are down for it, here. And I put 25 songs on it. So if you are a fan of me and you paid $100 to me, that's worth it as fuck. That's, you know, $4 a song.
Exactly.
That's great. And everybody was happy with it, from my knowledge.
So let me ask you this. So how do you go from passing out mixtapes, you know, outside of concerts to working with the biggest, you know, record label independently?
Let's get into it. Let's dive in, man.
Yeah, let's get it. Like, so I got signed to Cash Money, I think it was 2012 or 13. Totally random. I'm a kid. I'm 19 or 20 years old. I wasn't found because I had a big buzz and shit, nothing like that. Like, I had did a record with this kid, Noel, from my city, Kid Famous at
the time. From Florida, right?
Yeah, from Orlando. I'm from Winter Springs. But so I did this record with this kid, Noel. He's like a pop artist, and I had rapped on this song of his. And his manager at the time was DJ Nasty, who's like DJ Khaled's right-hand guy. Like, when Khaled would do shows, Nasty's the one actually spinning and shit. So this is his guy. So Nasty's around Bird one day, and he's trying to get Kid Famous signed, who's his artist, and he's playing him all these kid records, and then one of the records I'm on, and Bird's like, who the fuck's that kid?
Wow.
Let's call that kid up. And so, like, it was just on some really genuine shit. Like, he called me up. He's like, yo, it's Birdman. I did not believe it. I was like, who the fuck is
Did you just get a random call?
I was like, who the fuck? Well, Nasty had told me he had a deal for me, and he was like, you know, we got to work something out, but I got somebody that want to look to you. And, I got a call, Bird, and I was like, who the fuck is this? And he's like, nah, it's Stunners. And he's like, come to Miami. I want to sign you. I'll joke.
Yeah, right.
I swear to God.
Where was you at this time?
I was in I'm glad you asked. I was in the building of my janky ass managers at the time. They worked out of this office building. I was in the conference room of the office building at the head of the table. I remember it like
it'd be some fucked up shit.
I was like, for real. I don't know. It was mad surreal at the time. It was like reconfirmation that I was doing the right thing. But you know, I was like a kid, bro. Like I wasn't even that dope of an artist yet. Like, I was dope, obviously. Bird saw the talent in me, but you know, I had a lot of development to do to get to where I'm at now. Like I'm not even recognizable to that artist. You know, that artist couldn't touch me now. But so Bird just brought me to Miami. We like hung out for a couple of days, played him tons of music. He was and I had like weird music at the time. It wasn't like hits. It wasn't like street shit. It was like deep shit on weird beats. And Bird's bumping the shit out of his Bugatti. I'm like, what the fuck is life right now? Like, it was dope.
That's wild. And at that time too, it's like
that was pre Apple Music and Spotify, right. So it was and they
were people don't remember shit like that for music. How hard it was, even when fucking TRL went down.
Yeah,
Fucking Busta Rhymes and then was like, "What we gonna do? Yeah. How do we shop our music at this point?"
There's no Spotify playlist back then. Like,
what do you do with your album?
It was a hard like honestly, I lucked out on that shit because it would have taken me so long to progress to that way. The way I was doing it, I was just passing out CDs and shit, but just. Life works in these ways where like things that you'll do will connect later on. So you gotta just always listen to your gut. Like it was in my gut to do that song with that kid. And then just who knows, like that 6 months later, I got signed off of that record that wasn't even mine. You know, it's like life's cool.
That's the best advice you give to the viewers who kind of want to get into the game. It's like, you know, you got to just like shake the dice.
Bro.
You know, you got to work with people.
Everything you're called to do, do it. You never know how shit is gonna connect. Yeah. And you can always look back and understand it. But like in the moment, you have no idea how this or why these things are gonna connect. But just listen to your intuition.
Clearly, man. So when you're seeing Birdman, you know, listening to your music, and this is like, you know, this is fresh, you know, going from YMCMB to Rich Gang era, you know what I mean? And they're at the height, you know, they got Bugattis, they're in Miami.
Yeah, they started Rich Gang like right after I got signed. Like maybe like 6 months after I signed.
How was that like, man? Just seeing Rich Gang come from incubation to like the like, fucking moment that it was in history.
So like we're in Hit Factory in Miami, that studio down there. I was in there like all the time. They would just give me B room and just like give me a studio.
That was their studio?
They had multiple spots in there. So like Wayne had his spot. I'm not smoking this month, thank you though. But
not this month.
Just not this month. July 1st if you want to hang out.
We can do that. Come on, finish the story.
Like, so Wayne had his room, Bird had his room that like he listened to, and then upstairs is multiple rooms that artists on Cash, like Cash Money just always rented out all the Hit Factory. There's never anybody else in there. So Bird would like give me B room upstairs, which was like sick ass room for like, you know, weeks at a time. So I was just recording there all the time. Then like, I remember like I was there when he discovered Young Thug, and like I remember like being in the studio when he was like playing these records. He had that Danny Glover song or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, this is crazy. This is so sick. And then he brought Thug down, and like Thug was like just in the studio every day, and Thug's work ethic was so different from mine. Like my writing process was mad different. Like Thug would just go in there, pop some Molly, and make 10 songs. Like,
do you remember the first time you met him in person though? Did he have like the shaggy dreads and kind of looking down the whole time?
Yeah. Like I think he had like I don't remember if it was like blonde dreads. I can't remember. It was like right before Lifestyle. He was there for about like 2 weeks, and then him and Rich Homie made Lifestyle. And I remember that day because everyone was like, come to the studio, this shit's crazy. Got a hit. And I remember being just like, what everyone knew was a hit. Bird knew it was a hit. Like Thug had been recording for like weeks down in Miami. And then Bird was looking for that single, and then he made Lifestyle, and it was just like this crazy ass moment.
It's crazy that you were there for that era.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Like
it was Caskey. Like motherfuckers probably walked by you in the grocery store, don't know, man. You was there for some errors.
Yeah, and like it was a lot of emotions at that time. It was inspiring as fuck. It was also humbling as fuck because I'd been signed to Bird for a couple months now, and Thug just came out and just bow. And it like, his work ethic was different. His music was different. And it was like, I had to navigate tons of emotions of that, of like, damn, I got to step it up. I got to learn these things. Like it was dope as fuck in retrospect. Like their work ethic was insane. Their whole crew, they're all mad cool people. Like just well-deserved, bro. Thug is like one of the goats of our generation. It was really inspiring to just watch that whole thing. And it changed a lot of shit in my head about like how I perceive my shit.
How so?
Just made me want to work harder, bro. Like be obsessed with it.
I mean, you hear those early stories. Bro,
he would go in there and make 30 songs.
They said the night
I had to stop thinking as much and, you know, like just get into the work. You know, like it was cool, man.
And the dynamic that him and Rich Homie Quan was like none that anyone ever seen like prior to that.
They came when they were working on the Rich Gang album. They came to Orlando. They had a show there. I pulled up on them. They was at some club in Orlando. Then I brought them all to Plush Studios. It was like the studio I recorded at. Of all the time.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget this. Like I had my homies play some beats and they weren't sticking. We're in a group where there's like 30, 40, 50 people in the studio, Bird, Thug, Rich Homie, their whole crew. And like, I got my guys, they're like playing some beats and they ain't really sticking. And London hops up, opens up his laptop, and the first beat he plays ends up being Milk Marie. And then it's like, they go and just knock out a hit. And I was like, God damn, like, we all got to step it up. My guys got to step it up. I got to step it up. Yeah, like, it was humbling, bro. Like, they killed it, bro. It was really dope.
There's a song that, I'm not mistaken, You Don't Really Love Me.
Yeah, just put that out.
I'm going to be honest with you, Church is one of my favorite songs.
Thank you, bro.
I listen to it over and over again.
Second verse, right?
Was that You Don't Really Love Me. Yeah, like just the way that you, and the way that you label your joints, you know, are very classic, man, and real classy, you know. And just to hear you even, Blasey, bring up, well, you know, he was signed with Birdman and them, you know, so he already had to put himself to a different criteria.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like it changed me as an artist. Every artist that I've watched blow up before me, because I've been rapping for a long time, bro. I've seen Mac Miller, MGK, Jack Harlow, Young Thug. Like, I could go on and on about the artists that I've watched, like, blow
Post
up.
Malone.
Post Malone, bro. Tons of artists.
Come on.
And it's, like, it's dope and it's humbling and it's, like, you learn more of who you are. Because, like, when you see an artist that's maybe in a similar lane to you pop, you're, like, initially, you're, like, fuck. But it make you dive deeper in your artistry and be like, what? Who am I? I'm not that. I'm not Post Malone. I'm not these people. I'm like, and it's a beautiful thing, bro. You got to learn to like enjoy and celebrate other people's wins without feeling like it take away from your wins.
Exactly.
We get all win, you know?
And there's so many ways you could perceive that energy. You could take it and be like, man, fuck them.
I'm gonna totally block what's going on.
And I'm gonna pretend like I'm the only one on this world.
Swear
to
God, homie. Yeah. I think that's how some of the best people done made it.
Yeah.
Is by sitting there and catching tunnel vision for you.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I'm at now. It's like I don't really listen to that much other shit. I'm just focused on me and I praise everybody's wins. I'm not a hater. I love to see people win, bro. And we all got our own journeys.
Kasky, one more question for you.
Let's get it.
I appreciate you, Church, because you came through, man, and you put it. He was happy that you asked him.
Yeah.
Like, he needed this, man, for him.
Yeah.
Because this is a real solid cat right here, man.
Thank you, bro. For sure.
Like, and I respect everything that you do and you've done.
What
brought you to the culture? Even being a white boy, let's be real. Like, you know what I'm saying? We know, man, it's been black folks the most lightest. What brought you to the culture, Church? Like, where did you resonate at?
I think that something about hip-hop and rap just struck a new chord with me that was totally different. And it spoke to me in a way, like, rap and hip-hop is real personal. It's about our personal journeys and, like, what we go through as a society and shit. And it was just... I don't know, something about it was real, like, poignant that drew me in. And it's, like, it's weird because at first, you know, outwardly, I don't really belong here. But internally, I was just drawn to this shit. So I just have always, like, treaded lightly, learned, tried to be a student, learned. You know, I'm not here to be like, this is my shit. I'm a piece of it if I'm allowed to be. And I've been allowed to be, and I've always, like, shown my respect, you know, and that's...
I don't think you've ever heard anything weird online about, like, oh, Kasky did this, Kasky's this kind of person, so...
Real shit.
You know?
And I ain't perfect, bro. I'm not perfect, bro. I've learned a lot.
Exactly.
Know? That's all, man. And I just...
That's really what it's about.
Yeah, I'm honored to be here, man.
Kasky, we appreciate you.
Thank you.
Coming. Chopping it up with us, man. Hopping in the tank, man, and coming down 150 to 200 meters.
Yes, sir.
We're going to catch up with you again, Church.
July 1st.
You hear me?
Yeah, so what's next?
What's next? Come on.
July 1st, I'm dropping that single, Murder for Hire. Then July 7th, I'm dropping the album that we made in a week. It's called This Isn't Even My Final Form. Because that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Ain't my final form. I'm just getting fucking started. And then I'm going on a 3-month tour with my brother Doobie all over the country. If you haven't seen me live... Not to toot my own horn, but I fucking am gonna tear this shit.
It's worth the show.
Yeah, I get my.
You doing something in L.A.?
July 10th. Come on.
Let's go. Oh,
we in there. For sure.
Yeah, you don't need tickets. You come with me.
Yeah,
you come with me.
No, we're bringing Trevor and every. Yeah.
We're bringing everybody.
Cameraman.
Bring as many people as you want. You don't need tickets. You come with me. Yeah, let's go. I appreciate that.
Hey, man. If y'all don't know, you about to figure this shit the fuck out. The Sharp Tank.
Let's get it. Thanks for having me.
No Jumper. sharpest, coolest podcast in the world. Got my man Caskey, got my co-host Blazzy. Ooh, I like how that shit goes together.
Yeah. That was a setup right there. Yeah, that was good.
We shooting out the motherfucking gym.